Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
The Mr. Beacon podcast is sponsored by Wiliot, scaling IoT with battery-free Bluetooth.
So welcome to the podcast. This week we are interviewing Misha Benalil, who's the co-founder and CEO of Noddle. So Misha, thanks very much for joining us on the podcast.
Well, thank you, Steve, for having me on your show.
Yeah, I think you've got a lot of really interesting things to talk about, and it's a potpourri of like very interesting concepts and technologies from, of course, our home territory, which is Bluetooth, IoT, blockchain, and networking concepts. And of course, you are very experienced in the startup space and in terms of building networks with Open Garden and FireChat, the peer-to-peer social network. But this is a different kind of network. Can you explain to us a little bit about what Noddle does?
Sure. So at Noddle, the long-term vision is really to build a wireless network that basically has no hardware, no infrastructure, no antenna, no towers. And the vision is really to make this wireless network available everywhere. And today we do it using this fantastic wireless interface, which is Bluetooth Low Energy. We believe it's a great standard. Bluetooth took many years to become stable. And finally, we have this Bluetooth Low Energy that's very stable and that enables us to do amazing things. And any manufacturer also, because today I think Bluetooth Low Energy is shipped on more than 50%. Of all IoT devices out there.
Mm-hmm. So huge coverage.
The way we make this network available is pretty unique. We leverage what I call the smartphone infrastructure. And so we put a piece of software, which is a small networking library, on as many smartphones as we can through partners or people who use our apps. And that way, we create availability for this network. And any IoT device that's in proximity of one of these smartphones basically can send back information to the internet very easily or connect to the internet through one of these smartphones. So using a smartphone like a gateway or a router or a hotspot for IoT, if you want.
Mm-hmm. And these connections with IoT devices via this library that is in partners' apps, presumably these are like this is a monetization technique for people that are developing free apps. They get some reward, some value back from you. We'll go into how that works later. But what is that library doing when it talks to these IoT devices? What are some of the practical applications?
So the library is doing two major things. One, it's listening for any IoT device that would be in proximity from the phone. If the IoT device, which can be a sensor, a tracker in the, if you take the vertical of asset tracking, so basically if this sensor or IoT device is broadcasting information can be an identity, information can be measurements from the sensor for temperature, for example, then we capture that data and the library will tag it with the location and the time stamp and send it back to the cloud. And there, if we recognize that this information has been purchased by the owner of the device or the manufacturer itself, then we send back that information to the manufacturer. So technically, you could consider it almost like a DNS for IoT devices, what we do. And it can be just one-way communication, which brings already a lot of utility, or it can be two-way communications. In the case of one-way communication, we are using the traditional Bluetooth standard, so there's no need for the manufacturer of the device to change anything to their device. If that device wants to connect now to the internet and exchange information with the internet, the device we need to have our protocol installed on the IoT device.
Okay, and what is the protocol that it would talk? So presumably the first piece, which is just kind of identity and maybe some status, is you're just using a standard Bluetooth advertising packet, are you?
That's correct. Yeah. And that's correct. And the Bluetooth standard has actually very well, there's a nomenclature for how you structure the data when you're in your advertisement. And we just follow the guidelines and what's public on the Bluetooth standard. So you can, it can, the data that's broadcasted can be measurements of, it can be like just a measurement for a meter, for example, but it can also be temperature or any other information that sensors would collect. Mm-hmm. And this is very well structured and organized. And then we just capture that information, that advertisement, and send it back to the manufacturer. So that way we can create also heat maps that would display that information on a map. Mm-hmm. For example, if it's temperature, you would be able to have a map where you can see all the different measurements in of temperature in a city or across a country. In the case of pollution sensors, for example, we would be able to display the quality of the air in different places around the city or a whole country. And it's pretty powerful, and especially with the method we use, which is like kind of crowdsourcing this connectivity through people's smartphones, we can cover very large areas very quickly. And since we started to deploy the network, we have almost arrived to, we were focused in the US first, and we almost have now like a nationwide coverage in the US with more than 1 million daily active smartphones connecting to IoT devices every day. So it's a good start and pretty encouraging, and we believe that in 18 months from now we can probably be global, and that would be amazing because it would be the first truly global IoT network or network dedicated to IoT. And what it means once we are global with this kind of network, there is no roaming also. So for a manufacturer or someone who operates sensors or IoT devices, now you can have one entity you can talk to that will be able to connect or collect data from all your devices across all borders globally. And then we can do that at a very efficient cost also because we are fully software.
But it's kind of a stochastic, opportunistic, non-deterministic connection. You're kind of hoping that the odds are that you have enough of your libraries in these apps that the coverage will be there. Do you think that's viable? Are people willing to accept? You know, the alternative is you have some narrowband IoT LTE radio in there, which is obviously more expensive and the connection's more expensive, but you kind of know you're getting a connection. Is this approach kind of viable when you don't necessarily know that you are going to get the data back?
So it's a very good question. And many people come to us when they start to know about what we do with that question, which is very relevant. So first, what we do and what we are selling is what we call delay-tolerant network. So we can collect data for your own devices, from your devices, but we don't guarantee that this is going to be a real-time connection. And when you look at the space of IoT, you actually don't really need a real-time connection all the time, because in the case of measurements, I mean, the sensor can wait before sending you some data that or values that is measured, whether it's temperature, whether it's a it's a pollution sensor for measuring the quality of the air. There's no big hard deadline to basically receive that information. So when you look at the use case of delay tolerance, actually it's already most of the use cases that narrowband IoT wireless solutions, or I mean competitive solutions, are trying to cover. Then you are spot on when you say about the cost. I mean, that will have the choice whether you have a cellular module that you're going to add to your device, which will give you a real-time connectivity. But then you have other issues. You have issues of battery consumption. Bluetooth low energy is an amazing standard. It's an amazing radio wireless interface which consumes very little energy. You can have a sensor run on a very small lithium battery for years with this technology. And you cannot achieve that with any other alternative, especially if you add a cellular module. Then when you build IoT devices and you want to basically connect these devices to the internet, sometimes you're going to build a device that costs a few dollars, $10, $15, and you cannot afford to have a cellular module attached to your device because it would take the cost so much high that it would make no sense basically to build this device. And so what you are trying to achieve here is really to make connectivity as cheap as possible, so anything can be connected or reporting data to the internet in a very easy manner.
Now, I think there's a lot of use cases where this approach is viable, and it's something that we're very interested in from the Wiliot side, as well as the Mr. Beacon market prognostication perspective. So let's just finish off. I just want to round out the understanding of the protocol. So you're sending advertising packets. What about like an iBeacon? Could an iBeacon be used if a device is sending that? Would that be readable? It seems like that would have the advantage of waking up the app that might be in the background. Is an iBeacon a viable format?
So iBeacon can work, and in the case of the both-way connectivity, an IoT device could be waking up one of our smartphones, participating into the network, and then shake hands automatically with the smartphone and connect to the internet.
So what are the connection? So are you establishing a connection with certain devices that want it? Does it escalate or migrate into a connection-orientated conversation?
If the device has the protocol, yes, it can shake hands seamlessly and then connect to the internet. This can be very useful if you want to update a firmware, for example, because a device can ping a smartphone and then shake hands, connect, and check if there is an update for its firmware. Mm-hmm. And so that's one thing we can do with this kind of network.
And what protocols do you support or do you plan to support in order to have that connection-orientated conversation?
So for now, we only focus on Bluetooth, but we look at other alternatives in the future. The Wi-Fi standard is also evolving pretty well, and it looks like that soon it's going to behave a little bit like Bluetooth Low Energy in the next update. Mm-hmm. So if that's where the industry is going towards, then that would be amazing, because we would also be able to support Wi-Fi, which, even if it consumes a bit more battery, can enable you to move much more data. We hope that Wi-Fi will go into that direction. And I think Bluetooth standard has done an amazing job. It's evolving pretty well. We are just at the beginning of all the possibilities. The next evolution of Bluetooth is also including mesh capabilities. Mm-hmm. And what we do today, we don't even use mesh. I mean, we just do a peer-to-peer, point-to-point connection from an IoT device to a smartphone which relays the data to the internet. But with mesh, if most manufacturers adopt the Bluetooth mesh standard, that means that the data that's moved to the internet can basically have hopped on more devices before to connect to a smartphone. And potentially, maybe a smartphone is also connecting to another one that has access to Wi-Fi. So it's pretty exciting. I think the evolution of the Ubuntu standard is really powerful and will enable so many use cases in the future.
And
you are very well positioned with Will IoT also, I think, and you know that. I'm just dreaming of the day when, and I think it's going to happen sooner than what we think, when almost every small object or items that has some value will be able to be just in the asset tracking be tracked with one of these small BLE solution like the one you are working on, because that means now you can do the job of DHL being an individual almost.
Well,
the efficiencies that is going to enable in terms of the supply chain industry, logistics, and even for everyone's on daily life, it's going to make life so much easier for a lot of things in her life. Obviously, it raises also many challenges in terms of privacy and how you deal with all these identities moving. But I think these are good challenges to solve. That's among the opportunities we have when we work in this industry, and we want to make it we want to create more data, more information that's usable and actionable, and at the same time reduce the exposure of people while manipulating all these identities. But I think it's as long as we are all aware of that and build an infrastructure and technologies that can move and use that data, being aware of the implication of privacy, then we can move the things in the right direction. I'm a big fan of what I call zero knowledge analytics, and I think that's one of the solutions. Meaning, with some cryptographic protocols, now you can almost like have an amount of data, query that data, display a representation of that data, which is not tied to one single entity or identity, but have a large representation. And I think that's where it's useful to play with that data. And at the same time, enable someone to query that data with without even knowing the single identity of each of the devices participating in the representation of that data. And with cryptography, you can enable that real identity to be discovered only by the owner of the device, for example, or the manufacturer. So you can enable so many things. The main challenges are, how do you scale this technology where you can at the same time use the data and protect basically the privacy of everyone at a very large scale? And these are the challenges we are facing now. But I think blockchain is bringing some solutions, interesting solutions. And what I call also the democratization of cryptography will enable this to happen. So we live in very exciting times.
We do. Let's get on to blockchain in just a second. But before we go there, at a more basic level, you are building this network and you're leveraging the fact that we all have free apps on our phone. We didn't pay for them. And these companies need to make money somehow. And in the past, they put up these obnoxious interstitial ads that kind of got in the way. And I guess what you're doing is you're offering an alternative way for someone that's written a solitaire app or a Sudoku app to monetize their app. Is that a fair summary?
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Yeah, this is a fair summary. So what we do exactly is incentivize the adoption of the library by rewarding the participants in the network, which today are app developers mainly, but tomorrow they could be potentially also individuals. And we basically give a weight to each packet that they move through their device, which is based on several criteria. And from there, we reward them with points that are translated into our cryptocurrency called the Nodal coin. And that's how we reward the people participating in the network. And I mean, without technologies like blockchain, we wouldn't be able to build this kind of incentive. So it's a very good way to actually spark a network, because before we decided to go for that solution, we looked at other ways to spark such network. And so we tried with our own app. But today, I mean, it's not the time when I was making FireChat, for example, where you could get a million installs in a week. I mean, these days are gone unless you have like huge marketing budget and or an extraordinary useful app that basically arrives on the market. So you have to spark the adoption of the network by partnering. That's what we do with other app developers that have that presence. And if you go to the large players, they will all ask you for a huge amount of money to do that mm-hmm. up front. So with this mechanism of incentive using the Nodal coin and the blockchain, which register each of the transaction basically that are happening on network, so all the participants can easily see what's happening and they can understand why they got rewarded this amount of coins, for example, in a very transparent manner. And even better is by doing so, you avoid all this complex accounting of what do you owe to who, how do you pay each person. All that is happening automatically thanks to this trustless system built on top of a blockchain technology.
But couldn't you simply pay people in fractions of a dollar, of a cent? I mean, is it really necessary to include this blockchain technology? Because on one hand, I can see there may be some advantages, but you're suddenly dealing in a currency that people are not very familiar with. You must have done the kind of the pros and cons of dealing, creating your own currency versus one that is pretty well understood and accepted. What were the pros and cons when you looked at that?
So it's a very good question, and we thought a lot about this. But for people in the ecosystem, if you are a manufacturer and you want to benefit from the network, I mean, you can pay in fiat currency. But what will happen technically is this money will be sent to an exchange that will credit your account with Nodal coins. And then from there, it's kind of a prepaid account. And as you use the network, your credit goes down. So there's no change mainly for people in the industry. And you're right. I mean, cryptocurrencies are still pretty new. And especially in the B2B space, you don't want to slow down the adoption of the network because people would have to change their or understand how it works. So you don't want to disrupt too much the usual business processes. And that's why we partner with other platforms that basically which is the job to basically translate this fiat currency into a cryptocurrency.
Okay. So at the end of the day, if you want to, you can pay for this connectivity. If you're a device manufacturer, you can pay with dollars, and there'll be a conversion into your currency. And if you're an app developer, then you can turn it into dollars as well. So this is kind of a intermediate step that you're introducing.
Yes, but there are a lot of advantages in having also a currency to reinforce the ecosystem, and the fact that we use blockchain technology, you have very fast settlement, very fast exchange of value across the globe, and like I mentioned earlier, you also simplifies a lot of the aspects of the traditional accounting that are so heavy when you run an organization that's international and has presence in so many countries. Mm-hmm. So even if now we are focused in the US, we already have a spark of a network in more than 50 countries. Mm-hmm. Imagine if we had to deal with, I mean, each of these countries' local currency and specific method of accounting. I mean, it would be such a work. We would have to at some point you have a whole department of the company but just doing that job. And because of the blockchain and basically this ledger, you can enable this settlement to happen automatically across parties that don't necessarily trust each other. Now you create a layer where they can trust each other and they can audit what's happening. So they know what they got rewarded, they know what they paid for, where it's going. So it's a very transparent way to do business too, which brings a lot of advantages.
Do I have to worry about fluctuating values in your currency? That sort of introduces another level of volatility, doesn't it?
It's a good point, and I think we will see how the currency behaves once it is issued. For now, we are at the stage where we are dealing with points. It's to prove the system, which is working.
Okay.
We will certainly have to deal with this level of, of fluctuation. But the way we're going to price the service is also independent from the fluctuation of the currency, because you want to have a network that remains very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we have our own internal currency on points, which is a accounting of all the packets that are moved, and then you have the cryptocurrency, which is the economical, the value that represents basically the access to the network. So it's we are able to play with that.
I know entrepreneurs hate to talk about pricing. It's a very sensitive thing, and it tends to be something that evolves over time as you kind of mm-hmm. understand more about the world that you're creating. But can you give us a rough sense of, if I'm a device manufacturer, and let's say I'm putting Bluetooth tags on point of sale materials, you know, those end caps and those signs that are on shelves, and I want to I'm a brand, I make some kind of alcoholic spirits, and I'm paying these retailers to put these displays out there in the supermarkets. And I want to know, did the display, you know, I paid for the displays to go out there. Did you, the retailer, put them out? And so I want this network of apps to look for these beacons in all of the Safeways and Albertsons and so forth to know if they actually got deployed. What are the economics of that? Roughly, not precisely, but roughly, how much is it going to cost me for that sort of thing? And on the flip side, because obviously, you know, the right answer is it's going to be incredibly cheap. But the flip side is the app developer wants to get money for that. So roughly, what should the app developer expect to get paid, and what should the brand expect to pay you for the for that sort of use case? Is that a reasonable use case for your network to be used for? Maybe I'm not picking a good example, but
so the use case you mentioned is currently under test. And before I dive into that, it's a very good question, and I will be really open about it. We know we will have to price things differently according to the verticals, and we have some ideas of what a market can support in terms of pricing. We also know that we are creating new opportunities, and because before people would not be able to afford connectivity, and now because of this technology, they will be able to connect their devices. So I think it's going to take us a lot of time to figure out the right pricing. But to give you an example, so in the use case you mentioned, we actually work with a Fortune 500 company called Constellation Brands. They are a large distributor of alcohol. Distribute brands like Corona in the US. And so they have these displays that cost them, a lot of money. I think their budget for displays to support the brands in retail store is more than $10 million of actually of displays. So they want to know how useful it is for their brand and for optimizing the sales, basically, if these displays that I send all over the United States are being used by the distributors and retailers to support the brands. And so they actually decided to attach a small tracker to these displays, and we provide the network. So that's a very kind of new use case, still in the asset tracking space, but which basically shows all the things that you can enable when you can have a chip tracker and attach it to an item. And so in that specific use case, I think you have to be looking at the cost of the trackers, mm-hmm. and connectivity. I mean, cannot be more expensive than what it costs to have a tracker, and that's why in their use case they looked at other alternatives like cellular connectivity, and they quickly realized that, I mean, it would cost so much money to do it right, so they needed to find a new solution which also is adapted to their business model. And so Bluetooth trackers is a fantastic solution. So just to give you an idea of pricing, I think if you were to use trackers that cost between $5 to $10 to add to an item, and you know this is going to live for at least a year on a very small lithium battery, mm-hmm. I mean the cost of connectivity cannot be more than, I would say, like 10 cents a month. Mm-hmm. So that's just to give you an idea, mm-hmm. And in whole case, the cost of connectivity, I mean, is I think it will take also us time to establish what it really costs to move a packet from a beacon or an advertisement, mm-hmm. And if we deal with some people who use that solution for replacing a cellular module, and I can give you the example of scooters, I mean, or bike sharing. If you have a bike sharing business and you put a cellular module on your lock to locate your bikes and to lock and unlock the bikes, well, according to our calculations, for 1 million bikes that you operate, you're going to have an operating expense of probably close to $50 million a year. Mm-hmm. Now, in that specific use case, it would be it wouldn't be right to basically price the same way this solution the same way we would price a small Wheel IoT sticker, mm-hmm. to be located. So we know that if we replace the cellular module with a Bluetooth chipset and maybe some also physical element on the bike which would be like a hardware wallet, mm-hmm. to basically authenticate and enable the transactions to happen. I mean, we could bring down the cost, the overall cost, to probably a few million dollars a year. Mm-hmm. So it's a huge saving for companies that are operating these bikes.
But the challenge you have, though, is every time you make the cost of connectivity cheaper, you have less money to reward the writer of the Solitaire app or the Sudoku app.
Well, I'm not that. I mean, in this specific use case, they were not making money out of connectivity at all before. So yeah.
It's all upside.
So we are creating a new alternative source of revenues for app developers who participate into the network. Without impacting the user experience. I mean, it's not like when you have an ad that comes and shows up on your screen. You don't need that. And without impacting also privacy of users, because we are not like some of the SDKs that's going to resell your personal data to another company or advertising company. That's not our business. So we actually are only interested in the data that's around the phone that is broadcasted by IoT devices. Mm-hmm. We're not interested in the person carrying that phone. So we create basically a way for app developers to make money without selling user data, without impacting user experience. And it only takes 3 minutes for an app developer to add our library into their app. And then after, they have two ways. They can have also an opt-in. So we have a use case with one of the partners where, in exchange for accepting to participate in what we call the citizen network, mm-hmm. then the user can use the app without ads for a couple of days. Mm-hmm. So it's really a new way to monetize for app developers. And so far, I think it's only the beginning. We struggled a lot to how to pitch it to app developers first, but we are getting a bit better at that. And we have almost like 15 mobile applications now that are using the library, but the goal is to be on thousands. because you want to create a very long tail of app developers. You don't want to be dependent on just one or two big players.
And what kind of app developers do you find are opting for using this?
So it ranges from people in the industry who already use Bluetooth on their phone, on their app, so manufacturers themselves, who have an app to control the device or to communicate with the device. So manufacturers of hardware, people in the social networking space with apps like messaging, to ranges from messaging to dating apps, and we are looking also at the vertical of games now. So that's basically the kind of mobile applications that are embedding the library.
And we've talked about a couple of examples where this would be useful. Can you just give me one or two others of where, you know, what are the applications for monitoring? We did the bikes, we did the point of sale materials. Anything else that you see as being a key fit with what you're doing?
Well, any sensor data for smart cities, like pollution trackers, for example, is a great application and a great use of this kind of network, where you can have citizens of a city collecting data for improving, information to the all the citizens in the city. So the use case with smart cities are numerous, and from there you can go down to also metering. And metering can be, you could imagine in the future that a car also would park and pay the meter automatically using this new cryptocurrency, and that the car could potentially also pay for getting more energy automatically. And so that's the kind of use cases we see in the future. It's going to take time, obviously. But before we get there, I think the use cases for in the asset tracking space are, I mean, it's such a huge business, and we are just discovering and scratching the surface there.
Yeah, very good. Well, this, I could talk to you for hours, but this has been wonderful. Misha, thanks so much. And we're really going to look closely at what you guys are doing with Nodal, and hopefully we'll be working together in the future.
Well, thank you so much, Steve. We're also looking forward to working with you and growing the space and the number of use cases. But I think we are up for some great times together.
I agree.
Thank you.
Very good. All the best.
I have a very eclectic taste in music. I even produced or participated in some songs. But I have one, actually, you can find on iTunes.
All right.
Which was a bet I made with friends. And when we were all having a big party in Saint-Tropez, and actually I made a song out of it. And you can buy it or listen to it on iTunes.
You can. What's it called?
It's called Bubbles. It's about champagne.
Wonderful. It's Bubbles. And what would the, you know, who's it attributed to? Did you have a name for the group or?
No, if you just type my first name and last name and Bubbles, you will find it out. And it's not a fantastic song, but I think I had a lot of fun to make it, and then it was a bet with my very close friend from south of France, and I made it, so I won my bet. That was the goal.
Beautiful. Well, that's a first. The construct is the three songs you'd take on a trip to Mars. Obviously, that's one of them. What are the other two?
I don't know if I would take my song, even if it's a very funny one. if the lyrics are a bit crazy. But I would certainly take a few other titles I'm thinking about. And I don't know if three songs is enough, actually. I would
it
probably
isn't
take
enough.
More than...
That's, we make it very tough.
But among them, I would pick... I'm really a big fan. I used to play piano. I'm a big fan of piano, and especially great piano players, and I love Keith Jarrett.
Keith Jarrett.
I think my favorite is the Köln concert. I think it's from 1975.
Oh, okay.
And it's just an amazing piece of music. So I love that one.
And how would you describe his style?
I like acid jazz.
What's the genre?
And another big classic I love is, and I would probably take, is... Miles Davis doo-bop song, the doo-bop song. That's a really an amazing piece.
Brilliant.
And then in more classic ones, I mean, I love U2, so I would probably take one title from U2. Probably would be, I think it's I'm Still Looking For, or We Are Still Looking For.
Another one. Like, have you seen them live?
I've seen them live in South of France once, yeah.
And what was the concert like?
It was great. I mean, obviously, all these great songs from U2, so it was a great one. It's a great one. And then I can cite a few other ones. Like, I mean, I love Coldplay. I love Sting. Yeah. So.
Oh, me too. We have a lot. Yeah, I share a lot of your tastes. And actually, if you're a Coldplay fan, on I think it's.
Then there's one French band I really love too. I mean, two French band I love, but Daft Punk, obviously, and Phoenix. Phoenix is so good.
All right.
I was lucky to travel with them once from on the flight from Paris to San Francisco, and then they invited me to the concert in Santa Clara. And
amazing. Very cool. Well, check out the Coldplay documentary. It goes with their latest album, but it's recorded right from the earliest stages of when they first started playing together before Coldplay was called Coldplay. And it's on, I think it's Hulu. It's either Hulu or Prime, Amazon Prime. So that's
I'll
great.
Check it out. Maybe on Netflix or so. What's the name of the documentary? Probably I just search for Coldplay. I will find it.
But. Yeah, you'll find the name of the documentary. I think it's named after their last album, but actually spans every album. And it's a very personal. It's a lot of personal photography of them. So if you're into Coldplay, you'll like it. You know. So thank you for that.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around Black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders that we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.